These two young Petitzas were much alike, though not sisters. They had the same ideas, or lack of, and the same colour hair, alike dyed strawy. Well, they would grow up real today. Today, I would make a day of it. No school this after lunch, but education certain. Alex as teacher. Their names, they said, were Marty and Sunita. Presumably enough, and in the height of their childish fashion, so I said, "Righty right, Marty and Sunita. Time for the big spin. Come." When we were outside on the cold street, they thought they would not go by autobus, oh no, but by taxi. So I gave them the humour, though with a real horror show ingrin. And I called a taxi from the rank near centre. The driver, a starry, whiskery vec in very stained platy, said, "No tearing up now. No nonsense with them seats. Just re-upholstered, they are." I quieted his gloopy fears and off we spin to Municipal Flat Block 18A. These two bold little petitzas giggling and whispering. So, to cut all short, we arrived, oh my brothers, and I led the way up to 10-8, and they panted and smacked away the way up. And then they were thirsty, they said. So I unlocked the treasure chest in my room and gave these 10-year young divotchkas a real horror show Scotchman apiece, though well filled with sneezy pins and needles soda. They sat on my bed, yet unmade, and leg swung, smacking and peeing their highballs, while I spun there like pathetic Malenki disc through my stereo, like peeing some sweet scented kid's drink, that was, in like very beautiful and lovely and costly gold goblets. But they went, "Oh, oh, oh," and said, "Swoony" and "Hilly," and other weird slow vows that were the height for fashion in that youth group. While I spun this cow for them, I encouraged them to drink and have another, and they were nothing loath, oh my brothers. So by the time their pathetic pop discs had been twice spun each, there were two, "Honey Nose," sung by Ike Yard, and "Night After Day After Night," moaned by two horrible yarblers like eunuchs whose names I forgot. They were getting near the pitch of like young petitious hysterics, what were jumping all over my bed and me in the room with them. What was actually done that afternoon, there is no need to describe, brothers, as you may easily guess all. Those two were unplatted and smecking fit to crack in no time at all, and they thought it the bolshest fun to viddy old Uncle Alex standing there all nagoy and panhandled, squirting the hypodermic like some bear doctor, then giving myself the old jab of growling jungle cat secretion in the rooker. Then I pulled the lovely ninth out of its sleeve, so that Ludwig van was now nagoy too, and I set the needle hissing on the last movement, which was all bliss. There it was then, the bass strings like gavaretting away from under my bed at the rest of the orchestra, and then the male human gollus coming in and telling them all to be joyful. And then the lovely, blissful tune all about joy being a glorious spark like of heaven. And then I felt the old tigers leaping me. And then I leapt on these two young petitzas. This time they thought nothing fun and stopped creaking with high mirth, and had to submit to the strange and weird desires of Alexander the Large, which, what with the ninth and the hypo jab, were Chudesny and Zamashat. And very demanding, oh my brothers. But they were both very drunken and could hardly feel very much. When the last movement had gone round for the second time, with all the banging and creaking about joy, 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 then these two young petitzas were not acting the big Lady Sophisto no more. They were like waking up to what was being done to their Malenki persons and saying that they wanted to go home and like I was a wild beast. They looked like they had been in some big bitva, and indeed they had, and were all bruised and pouty. Well, if they would not go to school, they must still have their education. An education they had had. They were creaking and going, "Ow, ow, ow," as they put their platties on. And they were like punchy-punching me with their teeny fists as I lay there dirty and nagoy and fair shagged and fagged on the bed. This young Sunita was creaking, "Beast! And hateful animal! Filthy horror!" So I let them get their things together and get out, which they did, talking about how the Rosa should be got onto me and all that cow. Then they were going down the stairs, and I dropped off to sleep, still with the old joy, joy, joy crashing and howling away. What happened, though, was that I woke up late, near 7:30 by my watch, and, as it turned out, that was not so clever. You can vidy that everything in this wicked world counts. You can pony that one thing always leads to another. Right, right, right. My stereo was no longer on about joy, and I embrace ye, oh ye millions. So some vec had dealt it the off, and that would be either P or M, both of them now being quite clear to be sloshing in the living room, and, from the clink-clink of plates and slurp-slurp of peating tea from cups, at their tide mill after the day's rabbiting in factory the one, store the other. The poor old, the pitiable starry. I put on my overgown and looked out, in guise of loving only son, to say, "Hi, hi, hi there. A lot better after the day's rest. Ready now for evening work to earn that little bit?" For that's what they said they believed I did these days. "Yum, yum, mum. Any of that for me?" It was like some frozen pie that she'd unfroze and then warmed up, and it looked not so very appetitous. But I had to say what I said. Dad looked at me with a not-so-pleased, suspicious-like look, but said nothing, knowing he dared not. And Mum gave me a tired, like, little smack. "To thee, fruit of my womb, my only son," sort of. I danced to the bathroom and had a real scorry cheesed all over, feeling dirty and gluey, and then back to my den for the evening's platties. Then, shining, combed, brushed and gorgeous, I sat to my lomtick of pie. Papa said, "Not that I want a pry, son, but where exactly is it you go to work of evenings?" "Oh," I chewed, "it's mostly odd things, helping like, here and there, as it might be." I gave him a straight, dirty glazzy, as to say, mind his own, and I'd mind mine. "I never ask for money, do I? Not money for clothes or for pleasures? All right, then why ask?" My dad was like humble mumble chumble. "Sorry, son," he said, "but I get worried sometimes. Sometimes I have dreams. You can laugh if you like, but there's a lot in dreams. Last night I had this dream with you in it, and I didn't like it one bit." "Oh?" He had got me interessivated now, dreaming of me like that. I had like a feeling I had had a dream too, but I could not remember proper what. "Yes," I said, stopping chewing my gluey pie. "It was vivid," said my dad. "I saw you lying on the street, and you had been beaten by other boys. These boys were like the boys you used to go around with before you were sent to that last corrective school." Oh, I had an ingrin at that, Papa believing I had really reformed, or believing he believed. And then I remembered my own dream, which was a dream of that morning, of Georgie giving his general's orders when old Dim smecking around toothless as he wielded the whip. But dreams go by opposites, I was once told. "Never worry about thine only son and heir, O my father," I said. "Fear not, he canst taketh care of himself, verily." "And," said my dad, "you were like helpless in your blood, and you couldn't fight back." That was real opposites. So I had another quiet malenki grin within, and then I took all the dang out of my carmans and tinkered it on the saucy tablecloth. I said, "Here, Dad, it's not much. It's what I earned last night, but perhaps for the odd Peter Scotsman in the snug somewhere for you and Mum." "Thanks, son," he said, "but we don't go out much now. We daren't go out much, the streets being what they are, young hooligans and so on. Still, thanks, I'll bring her home a bottle of Saint tomorrow." And he scooped this ill-gotten pretty into his trouser carmans, Mum being at the cheesting of the dishes in the kitchen, and I went out with loving smiles all round. And when I got to the bottom of the stairs of the flat block, I was somewhat surprised. I was more than that. I opened my rot like wide in the old stony gapes. They had come to meet me. They were waiting by the all-scrawled-over municipal wall-painting of the Nagoy Dignity of Labour, bare vex and chinas stern at the wheels of industry, like I said, with all this dirt pencilled from their rots by naughty malchicks. Dim had a big thick stick of black grease paint and was tracing filthy slovos real big over our municipal painting and doing the old Dim guff, while he did it. But he turned round when Georgie and Pete gave me the, "Well, hello," showing their shiny droogie zoobies. And he horned out, "He are here! He have arrived! Hooray!" and did a clumsy, turny-toe bit of dancing.
"We got worried," said Georgie. "And there we were, a-waiting and peeting away at the old knife in my loco, and you might have been, like, offended by some vesh or other. So round we come to your abode. That's right, Pete, right?"
"Oh, yeah, right," said Pete. "Happy Polly Loggies," I said, careful. "I had something of a pain in a gulliver, so I had to sleep. I was not wakened when I gave orders for wakening. Still, here we all are, ready for what the old notchy offers. Yes?" I seem to have picked up that yes from PR Deltoid, my post-corrective advisor. Very strange. "Sorry about the pain," said Georgie, like very concerned. "Using the gulliver too much, like, maybe. Giving orders and discipline and such, perhaps. Sure the pain is gone? Sure you'll not be happier going back to the bed?" And they all had a bit of a malenky grin. "Wait," I said. "Let's get things nice and sparkling clear. This sarcasm, if I may call it such, does not become you, oh, my little friends. Perhaps you have been having a bit of a quiet gather eat behind my back, making your own little jokes and such like. As I'm your droog and leader, surely I'm entitled to know what goes on, eh? Now then, Dim, what does that great big horsey gape of a grin portend?" For Dim had his rot open in a sort of bazoomy soundless smeck. Georgie got him very scorry with, "All right, no more picking on Dim, brother. That's part of the new way."
"New way?" I said. "What's this about a new way? There's been some very large talk behind my sleeping back and no error. Let me sluice you more."
And I sort of folded my rookers and lead comfortable to listen against the broken banister rail, me being still higher than them droogs, as they called themselves, on the third stair.
"No offence, Alex," said Pete, "but we wanted to have things more democratic-like, not like you like saying what to do and what not all the time. But no offence."
Jules said, "Offence is neither here nor elsewhere. It's the matter of who has ideas. What ideas has he had?" And he kept his very bold glazies turned full on me. "It's all the small stuff. Malenki veshes, like last night. We're growing up, brothers." "More," I said, not moving. "Let me slushy more."
"Well," said Georgie, "if you must have it then.
We itty round, shop crashing and the like, coming out with a pitiful rookerful of cutter each, and there's Wildy English in the Muscle Man coffee mesto saying he can fence anything that any male chick cares to try to crash. The shiny stuff, the ice," he said, still with like these cold glazies on me. "The big, big, big money is available, is what Wildy English says."
"So," I said, very comfortable out but real razz-drazz within.
"Since when have you been consorting and comporting with Wildy English?"
"Now and again," said Georgie. "I get around all on my oddy knocky. Like last Sabbath, for instance. I can live my own jeezny droogie, right?"
I didn't care for any of this, my brothers.
"And what will you do," I said, "with a big, big, big den or money, as you so highfalutin call it? Have you not every vesk you need? If you need an auto, you pluck it from the trees. If you need Pretty Polly, you take it, yes? Why this sudden shillani for being a big bloated capitalist?"
"Ah," said Georgie.
"You think and gather eat sometimes like a little child."
Dim went, "Hur, at that.
"Tonight," said Georgie, "we pull a man-sized crast."
So my dreamer told truth then. Georgie the general saying what we should do and what not to do. Dim with the whip as mindless grinning bulldog. But I played with care, with great care, the greatest, saying, smiling,
"Good, real horror show. Initiative comes to them as wait. I've taught you much, little droogie. Now tell me what you have in mind, Georgie boy."
"Oh," said Georgie, cunning and crafty in his grin, "the old Maloko plus first, would you not say? Something to sharpen us up, boy. But you especially, we having a start on you."
"You have gather-eated my thoughts for me," I smiled away. "I was about to suggest to dear old Karova, good, 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 lead, little Georgie. And I may be like a deep bow, smiling like Bazoomney, but thinking all the time. But when we got into the street, I've videoed that thinking is for the gloopy ones, and that the oomny ones use like inspiration and what bog sends. For now it was lovely music that came to my aid. There was an auto itching by, and it had its radio on, and I could just slushy a bar or so of Ludwig van. It was the violin concerto, last movement, and I videoed right at once what to do. I said, in like a thick, deep gollus, "Right, Georgie, now!" And I wished out my cutthroat Britva. Georgie said, "Huh?" But he was scorry enough with his knife, the blade coming sloosh out of the handle, and we were onto each other. Old Dim said, "Oh, nah, not right that, isn't," and made to uncoil the chain round his tally. But Pete said, putting his rooker firm on old Dim, "Leave them, it's right like that." So then Georgie and your humble did the old quiet catstalk, looking for openings, knowing each other's style a bit too horror show, really. Georgie now and then going lurch, lurch with his shining nodge, but not no wise connecting. And all the time ludies passed by and vidded all this, but minded their own, it being perhaps a common street sight. Then I counted Odin Devar Treat and went ack, ack, ack with a Britva, but not at Litzo or Glazzy, but at George's noz holding rooker. And my little brothers, he dropped, he did, he dropped his noz with a tinkle tankle on the hard winter sidewalk. I had just tickle-wickled his fingers with my Britva, and there he was looking at the malenki dribble of Krovy that was redding out in the lamplight. "Now," I said, and it was me that was starting, because Pete had given old Dim the Soviet not to uncall the Uzi round his tally, and Dim had taken it. "Now, Dim, let's thou and me have all this now, shall us?" Dim went, "Yah," like some bolshy bazoomy animal, and snaked out the chain from his waist, real horror show and scorry, so you had to admire. Now, the right style for me here was to keep low like in frog dancing, to protect Litzo and Glazzy's. And this I did, brothers, so that poor old Dim was a malenki bit surprised, him being accustomed to the straight face on lash, lash, lash. Now, I will say that he wished me horrible on the back, so that it stung like bazoomy. But the pain told me to dig in scorry once and for all and be done with old Dim. So I swished with a Britva at his left noga in its very tight tight, and I slashed 2 inches of cloth and drew a malenki drop of Krovy to make Dim real bazoomy. Then while he went, "Oh, oh, oh," like a doggy, I tried the same style as for Georgie, banking all on one move, up, cross, cut. And I felt the Britva go just deep enough in the meat of old Dim's wrist, and he dropped his snaking Uzi yelping like a little child. Then he tried to drink in all the blood from his wrist and howl at the same time. And there was too much Krovy to drink, and he went bubble, 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 the red like fountaining out lovely. But not for very long, I said. "Right, my droogies, now we should know. Yes, Pete."
"I never said anything," said Pete. "I never gov'rated one slovo. Look, old Dim's bleeding to death."
"Never," I said. "One can die but once. Dim died before he was born. That red, red Krovy will soon stop." Because I had not cut into the main cables, and I myself took a clean tashtuk from my carmen to wrap round poor old dying Dim's rooker, howling and moaning as he was, and the Krovy stopped like I said it would, oh my brothers. So they knew now who was master and leader. Sheep, thought I. It did not take long to quiet these 2 wounded soldiers down in the snug of the Duke of New York, what with large brandies, bought with her own cutter, me having given all to my dad, and a wipe with tashtooks dipped in the water jug. The old petitsard we'd been so horror show to last night were there again going, "Thanks, lads, and God bless you, boys," like they couldn't stop, though we had not repeated the old samey act with them. But Pete said, "What's it to be, girls?" and bought black and suds for them, him seeming to have a fair amount of pretty pony in his garments. So they were on louder than ever with their, "God bless and keep you all, lads," and "We'd never split on you, boys," and "The best lads breathing, that's what you are." At last I said to Georgie, "Now we're back to where we were, yes? Just like beforehand and all forgotten, right?" "Right, right, right," said Georgie. But old Dim still looked a bit dazed, and he even said,
"I could have got that big bastard, see, with my Uzi, only some vet got in the way,"
as though he'd been drastin', not with me, but with some other male chick. I said, "Well, Georgie boy, what did you have in mind?" "Oh," said Georgie, "not tonight. Not this notchy, please." "You're a big, strong Chelovek," I said, "like us all. We're not little children, are we, Georgie boy? What, then, did thou in thy mind have?"
I could have changed Glazer's real orisho, said Dim,
and the old babuchkas were still on with their, thanks, lads.
It was his house, see, said Georgie, the one with two lamps outside, the one with a gloopy name like,
what gloopy name?
The mansion or the manse or some such piece of gloop, where this very starry Petitza lives with her cats and all these very starry valuable veshes.
Such as?
Gold and silver and like jewels. It was Wildy English who like said,
Arvidi, I said. Arvidi Orisho.
I knew where he meant. Old Town, just beyond Victoria Flat Block.
Well, the real horror show leader knows always when like to give and show generous to his like unders.
Very good, Georgie, I said. A good thought, and one to be followed. Let us at once itty.
And as we were going out, the old babuchka said, we'll say nothing, lads. Be near all the time you have, boys. So I said, good old girls. Back to buy more in 10 minutes. And so I led my three droogs out to my doom.
Just past the Duke of New York going east was offices, and then there was the starry beat-up biblio, and then was the bolshy flat block called Victoria Flat Block, after some victory or other. And then you came to the, like, starry-type houses of the town, in what was called Old Town. You got some of the real horror show ancient dommies here, my brothers, with starry ludies living in them, thin old barking like colonels with sticks, and old petitzas who were widows and deaf starry dammers with cats, who, my brothers, have felt not the touch of any chelovec in the whole of their pure like jesnies. And here, true, there were starry veshes that would fetch their share of cutter on the tourist market, like pictures and jewels and other starry pre-plastic cowl of that type. So we came nice and quiet to this dommy called the manse, and there were globe lights outside on iron stalks, like guarding the front door on each side, and there was a light like dim on in one of the rooms on the ground level. And we went to a nice patch of street dark to watch through the window what was ittying on. This window had iron bars in front of it, like the house was a prison, but we could viddy nice and clear what was ittying on. What was ittying on was that this starry petitza, very grey in the volus, and with a very liney like litzo, was pouring the old maloko from a milk bottle into saucers, and then setting these saucers down on the floor. So you could tell there were plenty of mewing cops and koshkas writhing around down there. And we could viddy one or two great fat scortinas jumping up onto the table with their rots open going, meow, meow, meow. And you could viddy this old babuchka talking back to them, govoreting in like scoldy language to her pussies. In the room you could viddy a lot of old pictures on the walls and starry, very elaborate clocks. Also some like vases and ornaments that looked very starry and dorogoy. Georgie whispered, real horror show den to be gotten from them brothers. Worldy English is real anxious. Pete said, how in? Now it was up to me and Scorry before Georgie started telling us how. First vesh, I whispered, is to try the regular way, the front. I will go very polite and say that one of my droogs has had like a funny fainting turn on the street. Georgie can be ready to show when she opens that wise. Then to ask for water or to phone a doc. Then in, easy. Georgie said, she may not open. I said, we'll try it, yes? And he sort of shrugged his plechos, making with a frog's rot. So I said to Pete and old Dim, you two droogies go either side of the door, right? They nodded in the dark, right, right, right. So I said to Georgie, and I made bold straight for the front door. There was a bell push, and I pushed, and brrr, brrr, sounded down the hall inside. A like sense of sloshing followed, as though the petitza and her koshkas all had their ears back at the brrr, brrr, wondering. So I pushed the old zvonik and the lenky bit more urgent. I then bent down to the letter slit and called through in a refined like gollus, help, madam, please. My friend has just had a funny turn on the street. Let me phone a doctor, please. Then I could viddy a light being put on in the hall, and I could hear the old babushka's nogas going flip-flap in flip-flap slippers to nearer the front door. And I got the idea. I don't know why, that she had a big fat pussycat under each arm. Then she called out in a very surprising deep-like gollus,
go away or I shoot.
Georgie heard that and wanted to giggle. I said, with like suffering and urgency in my gentleman's gollus, oh, please help, madam, my friend's very ill.
Go away, she called.
I know your dirty tricks, making me open the door and then buy things I don't want. Go away, I tell you.
That was real lovely innocence, that was.
Go away,
she said again,
or I'll set my cats on to you.
A malinky bit bazoomy she was. You could tell that through spending her jeezney all on a roddy knocky. Then I looked up and I vidded that there was a sash window above the front door, and that it would be a lot more scorry to just do the old plecho climb and get in that way. Else there be this argument all the long notchy. So I said, very well, madam, if you won't help, I must take my suffering friend elsewhere. And I winked my droogies all away quiet, only me crying out,
all right, old friend, you will surely meet some good Samaritan some place other. This old lady perhaps cannot be blamed for being suspicious with so many scoundrels and rogues of the night about.
No, indeed not. Then we waited again in the dark, and I whispered, right, return to the door. Me stand on Dim's plechos. Open that window, and me enter, droogies. Then to shut up the old petitza, and open up for all, no trouble. For I was like showing who was leader, and the chelovec with the ideas. See, I said, real horror show bit of stonework over that door. A nice hold for my nogas. They all vidded all that, admiring perhaps, I thought, and said and nodded right in the dark. So back tiptoe to the door. Dim was our heavy, strong male chick, and Pete and Georgie like heaved me up upon Dim's bulshy, manly plechos. All this time, oh, thanks to Worldcast on the Gloopy TV and more, Ludi's night fear through lack of night police, dead lay the street. Up there on Dim's plechos, I vidded that this stonework above the door would take my boots lovely. I kneed up, brothers, and there I was. The window, as I'd expected, was closed, but I outed with my britva and cracked the glass of the window smart with a bony handle thereof. All the time below my droogies were hard breathing, so I put in my rooker through the crack and made the lower half of the window sail up open silver smooth and lovely. And I was, like getting into the bath, in. And there were my sheep down below, their rots open as they looked up. Oh, brothers. I was in bumpy darkness, with beds and cupboards and bulshy heavy stoolies and piles of boxes and books about. But I strode manful towards the door of the room I was in, seeing a light crack of light under it. The door went squeak. And then I was on a dusty corridor with other doors. All this waste, brothers. Meaning all these rooms are but one starry sharp and her pussies. But perhaps these cots and koshkas had like separate bedrooms, living on cream and fish heads like royal queens and princes. I could hear the like muffled gollus of this old petitza down below saying,
that's it.
But she would be gover-eating to these mewing sidlers going, meow, for more monoko. Then I saw the stairs going down to the hall, and I thought to myself that I would show these fickle and worthless droogs of mine that I was worth the whole three of them and more. I would do all on my oddy-knocky. I would perform the old ultra-violence on this starry petitza, and on her puss-pots if need be. Then I would take fair rookerfuls of what looked like real Polensny stuff and go waltzing to the front door and open up showering gold and silver on my waiting droogs. They must learn all about leadership. So down I itted, slow and gentle, admiring in the stairwell Grazny pictures of old time, divotchkas with long hair and high collars, the light country with trees and horses, the holy bearded vec all nagoy hanging on a cross. There was a real musty von of pussies and pussyfish and starry dust in this dommy, different from the flat blocks. And then I was downstairs, and I could vidy the light in the front room where she had been doling maloko to the cots and koshkas. More, I could vidy these great, overstuffed scortinas going in and out with their tails waving and like rubbing themselves on the door bottom. On like a big wooden chest in a dark hall, I could vidy a nice malenki statue that shone in the light of the room. So I crested this for my own self, it being like a young Finn Divotchka standing on one noga with her rookers out. And I could see this was made of silver. So I had this when I itted into the lit-up room, saying, hi, 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 at last we meet. Our brief govery through the letter was not, shall we say, satisfactory, yes? Let us admit not, oh, verily not, you stinking, starry old sharp. and I like blinked in the light at this room and the old petitza in it. It was full of cots and koshkas all crawling to and fro over the carpet, with bits of fur floating in the lower air. And these fat scatinas were all different shapes and colours. Black, white, tabby, ginger, tortoiseshell, and of all ages too, so that there were kittens fiddling about with each other. And there were pussies full grown, and there were real dribbling starry ones, very bad tempered. Their mistress, this old petitza, looked at me fierce like a man and said,
"How did you get in? Keep your distance, you villainous young toad, or I shall be forced to strike you."
I had a real horror show smack at that, vidding that she had in her veiny rooker a crappy wood walking stick, which she raised at me threatening. So making with my shiny zoobies, I itted a bit nearer to her, taking my time. And on the way I saw on a like sideboard a lovely little vesh. The loveliest Malenki vesh any male chick fond of music like myself could ever hope to viddy with his own two glazies, for it was like the Gulliver and Plechos of Ludwig van himself, what they call a bust, a like stone vesh with stone long hair and blind glazies and the big flowing cravat. I was off for that right away, saying, "Well, how lovely, and all for me." But itching towards it with my glazies like full on it and my greedy rooker held out, I did not see the milk saucers on the floor. And into one I went and sort of lost my balance. "Whoops," I said, trying to steady. But this old petitza had come up behind me very sly and with great scorriness for her age. And then she went crack, crack on my gulliver with her bit of stick. So I found myself on my rookers and knees trying to get up saying, "Naughty, naughty, naughty." And there she was going crack, crack, crack again, saying,
"Wretched little slummy bedbug, breaking into real people's houses."
I didn't like this crack, crack egra, so I grasped hold of one end of her stick as it came down again. And then she lost her balance and was trying to steady herself against the table. But then the tablecloth came off with a milk jug and a milk bottle going all drunk, then scattering white splosh in all directions. Then she was down on the floor, grunting, going,
"Blasted boy, you shall suffer!"
Now all the cats were getting spooky and running and jumping in a like cat panic. And some were blaming each other, hitting out cat toll chocks with the old lapper and pfff and grrr and krrr. I got up on my nogus, and there was this nasty, vindictive, starry Forella with her wattles a-shake and grunting as she tried to lever herself up from the floor. So I gave her a Malenki fair kick in the litzo, and she didn't like that, crying, "Wah!" You could vidy her veiny mottled litzo going purple whirple where I'd landed the old noga. As I stepped back from the kick, I must have like trod on the tail of one of these dratsing, creeching pusspots, because I slushied a grumky, "Wah!" and found that like fur and teeth and claws had like fastened themselves round my leg. And there I was, cursing away and trying to shake it off, holding this silver Malenki statue in one rooker and trying to climb over this old petitza on the floor to reach lovely Ludwig Vowning, frowning like stone. And then I was in another saucer brimful of creamy Maloko and near went flying again. The whole vesh really a very humorous one, if you could imagine it slow chatting to some other vec and not your humble narrator. And then the starry petitza on the floor reached over all the dratsing, yowling pussycats and grabbed at my noga, still going, "Wah!" at me. And, my balance being a bit gone, I went really crash this time, on a sploshing Maloko and skriking koshkas. And the old Forella started to fist me on the litzo, both of us being on the floor, creeching,
"Thrash him, beat him, pull out his fingernails, a poisonous young beetle!"
addressing her pussycats only, and then, as if like obeying a starry old petitza, a couple of koshkas got on me and started scratching like bazoomni. So then I got real bazoomni myself, brothers, and hit out at them. But this babushka said,
"Toad, don't touch my kitties,"
and like scratch my litzo. So then I screeched, "You filthy old sumpka," and upped with a little Malenki-like silver statue and cracked her a fine fair chalchok on a gulliver, and that shut her up real horror show and lovely. Now, as I got up from the floor among all the cracking cots and koshkas, what should I slushy but the shim of the old police altar siren in the distance? And it dawned on me, scorry, that the old Forella of the Pusscats had been on the phone to the Millicents when I thought she'd been gavareating to the Mewlers and Mowlers. Her having got her suspicions scorry on the ball when I'd run the old Zvonok pretending for help. So now, sluicing this fearsome shoom of the Rosvan, I belted for the front door and had a rabbiting time undoing all the locks and chains and bolts and other protective veshes. Then I got it open, and who should be on the doorstep but old Dim, me just being able to vidy the other two of my so-called droogs belting off. "Away!" I creeched to Dim. "The Rosses are coming." Dim said,
"You stay to meet them,
And then I vidied that he had his Uzi out, and then he upped with it, and it snaked, whish, and he chained me gentle and artistic-like on the glass lids, me just closing them in time. Then I was howling around, trying to vidy with this howling great pain, and Dim said,
"I don't like you should do what you done, old droogie. Not right, that wasn't, to get onto me like the way you done, brat."
And then I could sluice his bolshy, lumpy boots beating off, him going, into the Darkmans. And it was only about 7 seconds after that I slushied the Millicent van draw up with a filthy great dropping siren howl, like some bazoomy animal snuffing it. I was howling too, and like yawing about, and I banged my gulliver smack on the hall wall, my glasses being tight shut and the juice astream from them. Very agonising. So there I was, like groping in a hallway as the Millicents arrived. I couldn't vidy them, of course, but I could slushy and damn near smell the von of the bastards. And soon I could feel the bastards as they got rough and did the old twist arm act, carrying me out. I could also slushy one Millicent goller sound from like the room I'd come out of with all the cots and koshkas in it. "She's been nastily knocked out, but she's proven." And there was a loud mewing all the time. "A real pleasure this is," I heard another Millicent goller say as I was toll-chocked, very rough and scorry into the auto. "Little Alex, all to our own selves," I creeched out. "I'm blind! Bog, bust and bleed you, you grajiny bastards!" "Language, language," like smacked a goller. And then I got a like backhand toll-chock with some ringy rooker or other full on the rot. I said, "Bog murder you, you vonny stinking brachnies. Where are the others? Where are my stinking traitorous droogs? One of my cursed grazny bratties chained me on the glazies. Get them before they get away. It was all their idea, brothers. They like forced me to do it. I'm innocent. Bog butcher you." By this time they were all having like a good smack at me with a height of like callousness. And they toll-chocked me into the back of the auto. But I still kept on about these so-called droogs of mine. And then I vidded it would be no good, because they'd all be back now in the snug of the Duke of New York, forcing black and suds and double Scotsmen down the unprotesting gorlos of them stinking starry petitzas, and they saying, "Thanks, lads. God bless you, lads. Been here all the time, you have, lads. Not been out of our sight, you haven't." All the time we were sirening off to the Ros shop, me being wedged between two Millicents and being given the old thump and malenki toll chop by these smecking bullies. Then I found I could open up my glass lids a malenki bit and vidy like through all tears a kind of steamy city going by, all the lights like having run into one another. I could vidy now through smarting glazies these two smecking Millicents at the back with me, and the thin-necked driver and the fat-necked bastard next to him. This one having a sarky like gavvery at me saying,
"Well, Alex boy, we all look forward to a pleasant evening together, don't we not?"
I said, "How do you know my name, you stinking vonny bully? May Bog blast you to hell, grazny bratches as you are, you sod." So they all had a smack at that, and I had my occo light twisted by one of these stinking Millicents at the back with me. The fat-necked knot driver said,
"Everybody knows little Alex and his droogs. Quite a famous young boy our Alex has become."
"It's those others," I creech, "Georgie and Dim and Pete. No droogs of mine, the bastards."
"Well," said the fat-neck,
You've got the whole evening in front of you to tell the whole story of the daring exploits of those young gentlemen and how they led poor little innocent Alex astray.
Then there was a shoom of another light police siren passing this auto, but going the other way.
Is that for those bastards, I said? Are they being picked up by you bastards?
That, said Fatneck,
is an ambulance, doubtless for your old lady victim, you ghastly, wretched scoundrel.
It was all their fault, I creeched, blinking my smarting glazies. The bastards will be peeping away in the Duke of New York. Pick them up, blast you, you vonny sods.
And then there was more smacking, and another Malenki Tolchok, oh my brothers, oh my poor smarting rot. And then we arrived at the stinking Roz shop, and they helped me get out of the auto with kicks and pulls, and they Tolchok me up the steps, and I knew I was going to get nothing like fair play from these stinking Grazny Bratchneys. Bog blast them! They dragged me into this very bright lit whitewashed cantora, and it had a strong van that was a mixture of, like, sick and lavatories and beery rots and disinfectant, all coming from the barry places nearby. You could hear some of the plennies in their cells cursing and singing, and I fancied I could sluice you one belting out.
And I will go back to my darling, when you, my darling, are gone.
But there were goluses of Millicents telling them to shut it, and you could even slushy the zvok of somebody being Tolchok real horror show and go, ow, ow. It was like the gollus of a drunken starry petitza, not a man. With me in this cantora were four Millicents, all having a good loud peat of chai, a big pot of it being on the table, and they sucking and belching away over their dirty, bolshy mugs. They didn't offer me any. All they gave me, my brothers, was a crappy starry mirror to look into. And indeed, I was not your handsome young narrator any longer, but a real strack of a sight. My rot swollen and my glazies all red, and my nose bumped a bit also. They all had a real horror show smeck when they vidied my, like, dismay, and one of them said,
"Love's young nightmare, like."
And then a top Millicent came in with like stars in his plechos to show me he was high, high, high. And he vidded me and he said, "Hmm." So then they started. I said, "I won't say one single solitary slovo unless I have my lawyer here. I know the law, you bastards." Of course, they all had a good gronky smack at that. And the stellar top Millicent said,
"Right, right, boys. We'll start off by showing him that we know the law too. But that knowing the law isn't everything."
He had a like gentleman's gollus and spoke in a very weary sort of way. And he nodded with a like droogy smile at one very big fat bastard. This big fat bastard took off his tunic. You could viddy he had a real big starry pot on him. Then he came up to me, not too scurry, and I could get the van of the milky char he'd been peating when he opened his rot in a like very tired, leery grin at me. He was not too well shaved for a Roz, and you could viddy like patches of dry sweat on his shirt, under the arms, and you could get this von of like earwax from him as he came close. Then he clenched his stinking red rooker and let me have it right in the belly, which was unfair, and all the other Millicents smacked their gullivers off at that, except the top one, and he kept on with his weary like bored grin. I had to lean against the whitewashed wall, so that all the white got onto my platties, trying to drag the old breath back and in great agony. And then I wanted to sick up the gluey pie I'd had before the start of the evening. But I couldn't stand that sort of vesh, sicking all over the floor, so I held it back. Then I saw this fatty bruise boy was turning to his Millicent droogs to have a real horror show smack at what he'd done. So I raised my right noga, and before they could creech him to watch out, I kicked him smart and lovely on the shin, and he creeched murder hopping around. But after that, they all had a turn, bouncing me from one to the other like some very weary bloody bull. Oh, my brothers, and fisting me in the yarbles, and the rot, and the belly, and dealing out kicks. And then at last, I had to sick up on the floor. And like some real bazoomy vec, I even said, "Sorry, brothers, that was not the right thing at all. Sorry, sorry, sorry."
But they handed me starry bits of gazetta and made me wipe it. Then they made me mate with the sawdust. And then they said, almost like dear old droogs, that I was to sit down and we'd all have a quiet like govareet. And then PR Deltoy came in to have a viddy, his office being in the same building, looking very tired and grazny to say, "So it's happened, Alex boy, yes? Just as I thought it would. Dear, 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 yes?" Then he turned to the Millicents to say, "Evening, Inspector. Evening, Sergeant. Evening. Evening, all." "Well, this is the end of the line for me, yes? Dear, dear, this boy does look messy, doesn't he? Just look at the state of him." "Violence makes violence," said the top Millicent in a very holy-type gollus. "He resisted his lawful arresters." "End of the line, yes?" said P.R. Deltoid again. He looked at me with very cold glazes, like I'd become a thing and was no more a bleeding, very tired, battered Chelovec. "I suppose I'll have to be in court tomorrow."
"It wasn't me, brother, sir," I said, a malenky bit weepy. "Speak up for me, sir, for I am not so bad. I was led on by the treachery of others, sir."
"Sings like a linnet," said the top Ros sneery. "Sings the roof off lovely. He does that."
"I'll speak," said cold P.R. Deltoid. "I'll be there tomorrow. Don't worry."
"If you'd like to give him a bash in the chop, sir," said the top Millicent, "don't mind us. We'll hold him down. He must be another great disappointment to you."
P.R. Deltoid then did something I never thought any man like him, who was supposed to turn us baddie wads into real horror show mal chicks, would do, especially with all those Rosses around. He came a bit nearer, and he spat. He spat. He spat full in my litzo, and then wiped his wet, spitty rot with the back of his rooker. And I wiped and wiped and wiped my spat on litzo with my bloody tashtuk, saying, "Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, sir. That was very kind of you, sir. Thank you." And then P.R. Deltoy walked out without another slow, though. The Millicents now got down to making this long statement for me to sign. And I thought myself, hell and blast you all. If all you bastards are on the side of the good, then I'm glad I belong to the other shop. "All right," I said to them, "you grazny brachnies as you are, you vonny sods. Take it. Take the lot. I'm not going to crawl around on my brooko anymore, you Mertzky gets. Where do you want it taken from, you Cali-vonning animals? From my last corrective, horror show, horror show. Here it is, then." So I gave it to them, and I had this shorthand Millicent, very quiet and scared-type Chelovec, no real Ros at all, covering page after page after page after. I gave them the ultra-violence, the crasting, the dratsing, the old in-out, in-out, the lot, right up to this night's vesh with the buggety, starry petitza with the mewing cots and koshkas. And I made sure my so-called droogs were in it, right up to the sheer. When I got through the lot, the short-hand Millicent looked a bit faint, poor old Vic. The top Ros said to him in a kind-type gollus, "Right, son. You go off, get a nice cup of chai for yourself, and then type all that filth and rottenness out with a clothes peg on your nose. Three copies. Then they can be brought to our handsome young friend here for signature. And you," he said to me, "can now be shown to your bridal suite with running water and all conveniences. All right?" In this weary gollus to two of the real tough Rosses, "Take him away." So I was kicked and punched and bullied off to the cells and put in with about 10 or 12 other plennies, a lot of them drunk. There were real Ujhazni animal-type Vex among them, one with his nose all ate away and his rot open like a big black hole, one that was lying on the floor snoring away and all like slime dribbling all the time out of his rot, and one that had like done all cow in his pantaloonies. Then there were two, like, queer ones who both took a fancy to me, and one of them made a jump onto my back, and I had a real nasty bit of dratsing with him, and the von on him, like of meth and cheap scent, made me want to sick again, only my belly was empty now, oh, my brothers. Then the other queer one started putting his rookers on me. Then there was a snarling bit of dratsin' between these two. Both of them wanted to get at my plot. The shum became very loud, so that a couple of militants came along and cracked into these two with like truncheons, so that both sat quiet then, looking like into space. And there was the old crovy going drip, drip, drip down the litzo of one of them. There were bunks in this cell, but all filled. I climbed up to the top one of one tier of bunks, there being four in a tier, and there was a starry, drunken vec snoring away, most probably heaved up there to the top by the militants. Anyway, I heaved him down again, him not being all that heavy, and he collapsed on top of a fat, drunk Chelovec on the floor, and both woke and started creaking and punching pathetic at each other. So I lay down on this vonny bed, my brothers, and went to a very tired and exhausted and hurt sleep. But it was not really like sleep. It was like passing out to another, better world. And in this other better world, oh my brothers, I was in like a big field with all flowers and trees, and there was a like goat with a man's litzo playing away on a like flute. And then there rose like the sun, Ludwig van himself with thundery litzo and cravat and wild windy volos. And then I heard the ninth, last movement, with the slovals all a bit mixed up like they knew themselves that they had to be mixed up, this being a dream. Boy, thou uproarious shark of heaven, slaughter of Elysium, hearts on fire, aroused, enraptured. We will toll-chop you on the rot and kick your grasny, vonny bum. But the tune was right, as I knew when I was being woke up 2 or 10 minutes or 20 hours or days or years later, my watch having been taken away. There was a militant like miles and miles down below, and he was prodding at me with a long stick with a spike on the end, saying, "Wake up, son! Wake up, my beauty! Wake to real trouble!" I said, "Why? Who? Where? What is it?" And the tune of the joy ode in the ninth was singing away, real lovely and horror show within. The militant said, "Come down and find out. There's some real lovely news for you, my son." So I scrambled down, very stiff and sore, and not like real awake. And this Roz, who had a strong von of cheese and onions on him, pushed me out of the filthy snoring cell, and then along corridors. And all the time the old tune, "Joy, thou glorious spark of heaven," was sparking away within. Then we came to a very neat like cantora, with typewriters and flowers on the desks. And at the, like, chief desk, the top militant was sitting, looking very serious and fixing a, like, very cold glazzy on my sleepy litzo. I said, "Well, well, well, what makes, bratty? What gives this fine bright middle of the notchy?" He said, "I'll give you just 10 seconds to wipe that stupid grin off your face. Then I want you to listen." "Well, what?" I said, smacking. "Are you not satisfied with beating me near to death, having me spat upon and making me confess to crimes for hours on end, and then shoving me among bazoomnies and vonny perverts in that grasny cell? Have you some new torture for me, you brachny?" "It'll be your own torture," he said, serious. "I hope to God it will torture you to madness." And then before he told me, I knew what it was. The old Petitzo, with all the cots and koshkas, had passed on to a better world in one of the city hospitals. I'd cracked her a bit too hard-like. Well, well, that was everything. I thought of all those cots and koshkas mewing for Maloka and getting none. Not any more from their starry forella of a mistress. That was everything. I'd done a lot now. And me, still only 15. "What's it gonna be then, eh?" I take it up now, and this is the real weepy and, like, tragic part of the story beginning, my brothers and only friends. In Stargia, state jail, that is, number 84F. You will have little desire to slushy all the Cali and horrible razkaz of the shock that sent my dad beating his bruised and crovy rockers against unfair, like, bog in his heaven, and my mum squaring her rot for, "Oh, oh, oh," in her mother's grief at her only child and son of her bosom, like letting everybody down, real horror show. Then there was this starry, very grim magistrate in the lower court gobbereating some very hard slovers against your friend and humble narrator. After all the Cali and Grasny slander spat forth by P.R. Deltoid and the Rosses, bog blast them. Then there was being remanded in filthy custody among Vonny perverts and prestupniks. Then there was the trial in the higher court, with judges and a jury, and some very, very nasty slovos indeed gobbereated in a very, like, solemn way, and then guilty, and my mum boo-hoo-hooing when they said, 14 years, oh, my brothers. So here I was now, 2 years just to the dove, being kicked and clanged into Stasia 84F, dressed in the height of prison fashion, which was a one-piece suit of a very filthy, like, cow colour, and the number sewn on the groody part, just above the old tick-tocker, and on the back as well. So that going and coming, I was 6655321, and not your little droog Alex, not no longer. What's it going to be then, eh? It had not been, like, edifying. Indeed it had not. Being in this Grasny hellhole, and like human zoo for 2 years, being kicked and toll-chopped by brutal bully warders, and meeting Vonny leering like criminals, some of them real perverts and ready to dribble all over a luscious young male chick like your storyteller. And there was having to rabbit in the workshop and making matchboxes and itty round and round and round the yard for, like, exercise. And in the evening sometimes some starry prof-type vet would give a talk on Beatles, or the Milky Way, or the glorious wonders of the snowflake. And I had a good smack at this last one, because it reminded me of that time of the toll-chocking and sheer vandalism with that did, coming from the public biblio on a winter's night when my droogs were still not traitors, and I was, like, happy and free. Of those droogs, I had sluiced but one thing, and that was one day when my P&M came to visit, I was told that Georgie was dead. Yes, dead, my brothers. Dead as a bit of dog cal on the road. Georgie had led the other two into a, like, very rich Chelovek's house, and there they had kicked and toll-chocked the owner on the floor. And then Georgie had started to razz-rez the cushions and curtains. And then old Dim had cracked at some very precious ornaments, like statues and so on. And this rich, beat-up Chelovek had raged like real Bazoomni and gone for them all, with a very heavy iron bar. His being all razz-dressed had given him gigantic strength, and Dim and Pete had got out through the window, but Georgie had tripped on the carpet, and then brought this terrific swinging iron bar crack and splooge on the Gulliver. And that was the end of traitorous Georgie. The starry murderer had got off with self-defence, as was really right and proper. Georgie being killed, that was more than 1 year after me being caught by the Millicents. It all seemed right and proper and like fate. What's it going to be then, eh? I was in the Wing Chapel, it being Sunday morning, and the prison Charlie was gobbereating the word of the Lord. It was my rabbit to play the starry stereo, putting on solemn music before and after, and in the middle too when hymns were sung. I was at the back of the Wing Chapel. There were four along here in Stargate 84F. Near where the warders or chassos would stand with their rifles and their dirty, bulshy, blue, brutal jowls. And I could video all the plennies sitting down sluicing the slovo of the Lord in their horrible cow-coloured prison platties, and a sort of filthy Von Rose from them. Not like real unwashed, not grazzy, but like a special real stinking Von, which you only got with the criminal types, my brothers. A like dusty, greasy, hopeless sort of Von. And I was thinking that perhaps I had this Von too, having become a real plenty myself, though still very young. So it was very important to me, oh my brothers, to get out of this stinking Grasny zoo as soon as I could, and, as you will vidy if you keep reading on, it was not long before I did. "What's it gonna be then, eh?" said the prison Charlie for the third raz. "Is it going to be in and out of institutions like this, though more in than out for most of you? Or are you going to attend to the divine word and realize the punishments that await the unrepentant sinner in the next world, as well as this?" A lot of blasted idiots you are, most of you, selling your birthright for a saucer of cold porridge. The thrill of theft, of violence, the urge to live easy. Is it worth it when we have undeniable proof? Yes, yes, incontrovertible evidence that hell exists. I know, my friends, I have been informed in visions that there is a place darker than any prison, hotter than any flame of human fire, where souls of unrepentant criminal sinners like yourselves, and don't leer at me, damn you, don't laugh, like yourselves, I say, scream in endless and intolerable agony, their noses choked with the smell of filth, their mouths crammed with burning ordure, their skin peeling and rotting, a fireball spinning in their screaming guts. Yes, yes, I know. At this point, brothers, a plenty somewhere or other near the back row let out a shum of lip music. And then the brutal chasseurs were on a job right away, rushing real scurry to what they thought was the scene of the shum, then hitting out nasty and delivering toll chocks left and right. Then they picked out one poor trembling plenny, very thin and Malenkin starry too, and dragged him off. But all the time he kept creeching, "It wasn't me, it was him, see?" But that made no difference. He was toll chocked real nasty and then dragged out of the wing chapel, creeching his Gulliver off. "Now," said the prison Charlie, "listen to the word of the Lord." Then he picked up the big book and flipped over the pages, keeping on wetting his fingers to do this by licking them splurge, splurge. He was a bolshy, great burly bastard with a very red lipso. But he was very fond of myself, me being young, and also now very interested in the big book. It had been arranged as part of my, like, further education to read in the book, and even have music on the chapel stereo while I was reading. Oh, my brothers, and that was real horror show. They would, like, lock me in and let me slushy holy music by J.S. Bach and G.F. Handel, and I would read of these starry Yehudis toll-chocking each other and then peating their Hebrew vino and getting onto the bed with their wives like handmaidens. Real horror show. That kept me going, brothers. I didn't so much co-pat the later part of the book, which is more like all preachy gover-eating than fighting and the holding out. But one day the child said to me, squeezing me like tight with his bolshy beefy rooker, "Ah, 6655321, think on the divine suffering. Meditate on that, my boy." And all the time he had this rich Manny von of Scotch on him. And then he went off to his little cantora to peat some more. So I read all about the scourging and crowning with thorns, and then the cross vesh and all that cow. And I vidded better that there was something in it. While the stereo played bits of lovely Bach, I closed my glasses and vidded myself helping in and even taking charge of the toll-chocking and the nailing in, being dressed like in a toga, what was the height of Roman fashion. So being in Stasia 84F was not all that wasted, and the governor himself was very pleased to hear that I'd taken to like religion, and that was where I had my hopes. This Sunday morning, the Charlie read out from the book about Chelovex, who sloshied the Slovo and didn't take a blind bit, being like a dommy built upon sand. And then the rain came, splash, and the old boom-a-boom cracked the sky, and that was the end of that dommy. But I thought only a very dim vet would build his dommy upon sand, and a right lot of sneering droogs and nasty neighbours a vet like that would have, them not telling him how dim he was doing that sort of building. Then the Charles creeched, "Right, you lot, we'll end with hymn number 435 in the prisoner's hymnal." Then there was a crash and a plop and a whish-whish while the plennies picked up and dropped and lick-turned the pages of their grazzy Malenki hymn books, and the bully-fierce warders creeched, "Stop talking there, bastards! I'm watching you, 920537. Of course, I had the disc ready on the stereo, and I let the simple music for organ only come belting out with a Then the plenty started to sing real horrible.
Weak tea are we new brewed, but stirring makes all strong. We eat no angel's food, our time of trial are long.
They sort of howled and wept, these stupid slovos, with the Charlie like whipping them on with, "Louder, damn you! Sing up!" And the warders screeching, "Just you wait, 7749222, and one on the turnip coming up for you, filth!" Then it was all over, and the Charlie said, "May the Holy Trinity keep you always and make you good. Amen." And the shamble out began to a nice choice bit of Symphony No. 2 by Adrian Zweigselber, chosen by your humble narrator, oh my brothers. What a lot they were, I thought, as I stood there by the starry chapel stereo, videoing them all shuffle out going, "Murr" and "Baa" like animals, and up your piping with their grasny fingers at me, because it looked like I was very special favoured. When the last one had slouched out, his rookers hanging like an ape, and the one warder left giving him a fair loud toll chop on the back of the gulliver, and when I turned off the stereo, the Charlie came up to me, puffing away at a cancer, still in his starry bogman's platties, all lacy and white like a divotchka's, he said, "Thank you as always, little 6655321, and what news have you got for me today?" The idea was, I knew, that this Charlie was after becoming a very great holy chelovec in the world of prison religion, and he wanted a real horror show testimonial from the governor, so he would go and govery quietly to the governor now and then about what dark plots were brewing among the plennies, and he would get a lot of this cow from me. A lot of it would be all, like, made up, but some of it would be true. Like, for instance, the time it had come through to our cell on the water pipes, knock, knock, knocky, knocky, knock, knocky, knock. That big harriman was going to break. He was going to toll-chop the warder at slop time and get out in the warder's platties. There was going to be a big throwing about of the horrible pisha we got in the dining hall, and I knew about that and told. Then the Charlie passed it on and was complimented, like, by the governor for his public spirit and keen ear. So this time I said, and this was not true, "Well, sir, it has come through the pipes that a consignment of cocaine has arrived by irregular means, and that a cell somewhere along Tier 5 is to be the centre of distribution." I made it all up as I went along, like I made up so many of these stories, but the prison Charlie was so grateful, saying, "Good, good, good. I shall pass that on to himself," this being what he called a governor. Then I said, "Sir, I have done my best, have I not? I always use my very polite gentleman's gollus govereating with those at the top. I've tried, sir, haven't I?" "I think," said the Charlie, "that on the whole you have 6655321. You've been very helpful and, I consider, shown a genuine desire to reform. You will, if you continue in this manner, earn your remission with no trouble at all." "But, sir," I said, "how about this new thing they're talking about? How about this new light treatment that gets you out of prison in no time at all and makes sure that you never get back in again?" "Oh," he said, very light wary. "Where did you hear this? Who's been telling you these things?" "These things get around, sir," I said. "Two warders talk, as it might be, and somebody can't help hearing what they say. And then somebody picks up a scrap of newspaper in the workshops, and the newspaper says all about it. How about you putting me in for this thing, sir, if I may make so bold as to make the suggestion?" You could vid him thinking about that while he puffed away at his cancer, wondering how much to say to me about what he knew about the vesh I'd mentioned. Then he said, "I take it you're referring to Ludovico's technique." He was still very wary. "I don't know what it's called, sir," I said. "All I know is that it gets you out quickly and makes sure that you don't get in again." "That is so," he said, his eyebrows like all beetling while he looked down at me. "That is quite so, 6655321. Of course, it's only in the experimental stage at the moment. It's very simple, but very drastic." "But it's being used here, isn't it, sir?" I said. "Those new light white buildings by the south wall, sir. We've watched those being built, sir, when we've been doing our exercise. It's not being used yet, he said. Not in this prison, 6655321. Himself has grave doubts about it. I must confess, I share those doubts. The question is whether such a technique can really make a man good. Goodness comes from within, 6655321. Goodness is something chosen. When a man cannot choose, he ceases to be a man. He would have gone on with a lot more of this cow, but we could slushy the next lot of plennies marching clank, clank, clank down the iron stairs to come for their bit of religion. He said, "We'll have a little chat about this some other time. Now you better start the voluntary." So I went over to the Starry Stereo and put on J.S. Bach's Vache Off, Choral Prelude, and in these Grasny Vonny bastard criminals and perverts came shambling like a lot of broke-down apes. The warders and chassos liked barking at them and lashing them, and soon the prison Charlie was asking them, "What's it gonna be then, eh?" And that's where you came in. We had four of these lomticks of like prison religion that morning, but the child said no more to me about this Ludovico's technique, whatever it was, oh my brothers. When I finished my rabbit with a stereo, he just gabareted a few slow rows of thanks, and then I was privodeted back to the cell on Tier 6, which was my very vonny and crammed home. The chasso was not really too bad of a vec, and he did not torture or kick me in when he'd opened up. He just said, "Here we are, sonny. Back to the old waterhole." And there I was with my new type droogs, all very criminal, but bog be praised, not given to perversions of the body. There was Zophar on his bunk, a very thin and brown vic, who went on and on and on in his, like, cancery gollus, so that no one bothered to slushy. What he was saying now, like to nobody, was, "And at that time, you couldn't get hold of a poggy," whatever that was, brothers, "not if you was to hand over 10 million Archibalds. So what do? I go down to Turkey's and says, 'I got this sprug on that Morrissey.' And what can he do?" It was all this very old-time, real criminal slang he spoke. Also, there was Wool, who had only one glazzy, and he was tearing bits of his toenails off in honour of Sunday. Also, there was Big Jew, a very fast, sweaty vec lying flat on his bunk like dead. In addition, there was Jojon and the doctor. Jojon was very mean and keen and wiry, and had specialised in, like, sexual assault. And the doctor had pretended to be able to cure SIF and GON and GLEET, but he had only injected water. Also, he had killed off two Devotchkas instead, like he had promised, of getting rid of their unwanted loads for them. They were a terrible Grasny lot, really, and I didn't enjoy being with them, oh my brothers, any more than you do now. But it won't be for much longer. Now, what I want you to know is that this cell was intended for only three when it was built. But there were six of us there, all jammed together, sweaty and tight. And that was the state of all the cells in all the prisons in those days, brothers. And a dirty, cally disgrace it was, there not being decent room for a Chelovec to stretch his limbs. And you will hardly believe what I say now, which is that on this Sunday they brassatted in another plenty. Yes, we had had our horrible pisha of dumplings and vonny stew, and were smoking a quiet cancer each on our bunks, when this vec was thrown into our midst. He was a chinny, starry vec, and it was him who started creeching complaints before we even had a chance to vidy the position. He tried to, like, shake the bars, creeching, "I demand my sodding rights! This one's full up. It's a bleeding imposition, that's what it is." But one of the chassos came back to say he had to make the best of it and share a bunk with whoever would let him. Otherwise, it would have to be the floor. "And," said the warder, "it's going to get worse, not better, a right dirty criminal world you lot are trying to build."